We begin by looking at the radar and the weather, of course. Governor Cooper has declared a state of emergency as the entire state braces for whatever's left of Hurricane Ian. The wind is already picking up in places, and we may be seeing some rainfall by the end of the day. Ian has been upgraded back to a Category 1 hurricane and is expected to make landfall somewhere in South Carolina fairly shortly, then travel northwest through Charlotte into the Carolina Mountains. The Triangle area can expect rain to start early tomorrow morning for sure, with the bulk of the accumulation coming as we move into Friday afternoon. Earlier today, I was able to reach out to the National Weather Service and get the absolute latest local forecast for Chapel Hill. Here's what I heard.
Yeah, so y'all will probably start seeing some rain in the morning time, but the most impactful, heaviest rain won't really fill in until in the afternoon to evening period. And it looks like that period will be the heaviest. And then as we progress into a Saturday morning, we might actually see conditions improve substantially, especially as we get into the Saturday afternoon period. So, yeah, so we expect, anywhere from, 2 to 6 inches where you all are, perhaps a little bit less. Further south looks like the latest update, and it's expecting a little bit more rain down there, closer to the Charlotte area. So the main threats are locally heavy rain and perhaps some flash flooding and then some gusty winds as well. Likely see anywhere upwards of occasional gusts up to 35, maybe 40-mile-per-hour winds. Again, those look to be a little bit stronger south of y'all, closer to the Charlotte area.
That's Nick Lucchetti from the National Weather Service in Raleigh. Again, we have a lot of rain expected. The most recent forecast I saw updated is now predicting over 3 inches of rain tomorrow for Chapel Hill. So definitely stay home if you can and be prepared for lots of rain if you have to go out. All of this rain is leading to some postponements and cancellations. All Orange County school events are canceled for this evening, and all Orange County and Chapel Hill Carrboro City schools will be closed Friday. Down in Chatham County, school district has gone to remote learning for Friday. You can check chapelboro.com for all the latest in postponements and closures. Also got some news across the desk this afternoon of interest from the Orange County Sheriff's Office, and deputies with the Orange County Sheriff's Office and officers with Chapel Hill Police Department worked together this afternoon to thwart an attempted break-in into a residence after a person saw suspicious activity on his home security cam. Units responded to the call off 15501 south of Southern Community Park. They set up a perimeter. A canine team ran a track on the subject and combined with the assistance from other area residents providing updates. And when he attempted to flee the area, deputies took the suspect into custody. So an in-process burglary thwarted by the police. You don't actually see that all that often. But good job with the combination of Orange County Sheriff's and Sheriff's Office and Chapel Hill Police. Nabbing that attempted burglar today. We go over to campus now, where throughout this month, UNC's Office of Environment, Health, and Safety has been sharing updates on its lead testing around campus. Following water fountains in Wilson Library returning detectable levels of the chemical, dozens of other fixtures across campus have come back with lead contamination after being tested. The most recent were fountains in Carrington Hall and Isaac M. Taylor Hall, with the school announcing those just on Monday. How has this happened, and what does it mean for the UNC campus community? Carolina Connections' Sophie Mallinson has some answers.
As students make their way into Wilson Library's main study room, they pass by two historical water fountains. Taped to each fountain is a sign, "Out of order, do not use," in all caps. On September 1st, the Office of Environment, Health, and Safety, or EHS, sent out an email to the UNC community saying that three of Wilson Library's public water fountains had detectable levels of lead.
Yeah, when I first read the email, I didn't feel surprised.
Erin Siegel McIntyre is a UNC journalism professor in Carroll Hall. She first moved to Chapel Hill from Tijuana, Mexico, in 2020, and she described bringing with her a tradition of carrying around garrafones, or large water jugs instead of relying on the water in a building.
But after a while, I got tired. I would have a little wagon that I would use to, you know, pull my water into Carroll Hall. And I thought, okay, Aaron, like, this is overkill. This is silly. Everyone else is using the water fountain. And so I did start using it about a year ago.
But after the lead findings at Wilson Library,
I am no longer drinking water from Carroll Hall. You always gotta trust your instincts. Like, something when I got here to Carolina said, like, just bring your own water.
While EHS has not released any information about lead in Carroll Hall, Wilson Library's fountains were just the beginning of the findings. The Orange County Water and Sewer Authority says they have no lead service lines. So as for the cause of the lead in the water, Executive Director of EHS, Catherine Brennan, says,
we do think it's probably the fixtures that are causing the issue. Some older fixtures, they might have used lead solder to weld components together back when they were produced. And so over time, what happens with the corrosivity of the water, it can start to leach the lead off of that solder.
The Safe Drinking Water Act largely banned lead components from being used in water systems in 1986, but many of the university's buildings predate that.
We're actually doing a comprehensive review of the make, model, and age of the water fountains to identify, you know, do we have older fountains, and then we can prioritize testing other areas for that reason.
The university investigation, which was prompted after a summer research group did water testing across campus, found many of the contaminated fixtures had lead levels exceeding 15 parts per billion. This is what the EPA lists as the lead action level, which requires the EHS to try to reduce the water's lead concentration. While no amount of lead in water is considered a good thing, EPA action levels are set more with children in mind, as lead exposure at a young age is much more damaging, according to Ed Norman from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services.
But even for adults, I mean, high levels of lead, they can affect, you know, blood pressure. All sorts of chronic conditions are affected by lead.
With severe exposures, Norman described how lead can accumulate in the bone, causing things like limited wrist mobility. And the EPA says consuming lead can cause reproductive and kidney problems. Norman says there's no magic number in terms of how long it takes to see health effects. It can take years, and it really depends on how chronic the lead exposure is. Some of UNC's water fixtures were around or under lead levels of 15 parts per billion. Norman says people who use these fountains irregularly don't have much to worry about. However, one of Wilson Library's second-floor fountains had a measurement of at least 185 parts per billion.
Certainly the employees who use that second-floor fountain, well, that's of concern. That would be a situation where they might want to consider having themselves tested.
Some of the more recently announced buildings have water fixtures with even higher lead levels, like one in Fordham Hall that had a second test result of 662 parts per billion, despite having non-detectable levels the first time it was tested. That's 44 times more than the EPA's lead action level. Brennan emphasized that the latest lead updates will be posted to the EHS website. And with every water sample taking up to a week to get test results, she expects the lead investigation to take a month. In Chapel Hill, I'm Sophie Mallinson.
Thank you, Sophie. Carolina Connection is a student-produced radio newscast from the UNC Hussmann School of Journalism and Media. You can hear their full programs on Saturday mornings at 8:30 right here on 97.9 The Hill through the spring semester. In other public health news, the latest round of COVID-19 numbers from state health officials was released yesterday. The news was good. Hospitalizations are down below 1,000 for the first time since July, and COVID particles in wastewater dropped to their lowest levels since April. Orange and Chatham counties remain in the medium levels of community spread category. Durham County has dropped to the low level of community spread category. We also received word this afternoon that Chatham County has recorded its first case of monkeypox so far. That's all we know at this time. We'll give you more details as they emerge. And some national news that got local yesterday or Tuesday. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen made a stop in Chapel Hill on Tuesday. She was in town to help bring awareness to the long-term economic impacts of climate change and touting the Inflation Reduction Act's ability to mitigate those impacts. She toured a clean energy company in Durham before giving a speech from a solar field in Chapel Hill. And Chapel Hill Mayor Pam Hemminger was around for most of it. She talked about it in our conversation at 3:30. You'll be able to find that conversation in the News on the Hill section of chapelborough.com shortly after the conclusion of today's program. Time for sports, and guess what? The top story in sports is also the weather. Got some cancellations and postponements to tell you about as we work our way into this extra wet weekend soaked with Hurricane Ian water. Men's soccer got out in front of it first by postponing tomorrow's game that they had scheduled with defending national champions Clemson. They'll play that game on Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. instead. That means that their match on Tuesday against Elon has been canceled and will not be rescheduled. Live action with Carolina basketball was the next to go down. They've postponed that event until next week. It was scheduled to happen tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Smith Center, but with all the inclement weather and the state of emergency, they've decided to not try to get a whole bunch of people out on campus for that event. We'll just move it back to October 7th, 7:30 p.m. next Friday for the start of live action with Carolina basketball. Then that football game on Saturday, as of right now, that is still on. So that game will happen as the forecast continues to show less and less rain on Saturday and more on Friday. Also of note, Carolina swimming and diving and Carolina volleyball have games scheduled for tomorrow evening, and those games are still happening at this time. Speaking of that football game, many are reminiscing not so fondly about the last time the Tar Heels played a game in a hurricane. It was also against the Hokies. That was back in 2016, resulting in a rain-soaked 34-3 loss that effectively ended the ACC hopes for the Heels that season. Looking over at the hoops team again, the family that keeps on giving has supplied another young athlete to don Carolina blue. That would be the May family. Current UNC junior Bo May will be walking on to the basketball team this season. Of course, Bo's father, Mark, played football at Carolina in the 80s. His older brother, Luke, was first team ACC as a member of the basketball team just a few years ago. And his youngest brother, Drake, he's been doing okay as the quarterback for the UNC football team this season. So congratulations to yet another member of the May family. Elsewhere in UNC sports, I'll file this one under not surprising, but still fun to talk about. Field hockey star and friend of the station, Aaron Mattson, is the ACC Offensive Player of the Week. She scored both goals in the team's 2-0 win against Wake Forest last week. Congratulations once again to her. The North Carolina Botanical Gardens recently opened its annual exhibit, Sculpture in the Garden. Local artists from the Greater Triangle area are displaying ceramic lotus flowers, mosaic goddesses, and scrap metal gardens. Reporter Zachary Turner filed this story from the opening event, and he also got to pay a visit to one artist's workshop in Farrington Village.
In another life, Hamidou Sissoko was an auto mechanic. But today, he uses those skills to create beautiful works of art.
Usually I don't say that I'm a former car mechanic, but I said, okay, artist, and I'm looking for this kind of a material. And when I describe, they can tell he knows something about the car.
Sissoko grew up in Mali. He immigrated to the United States in 2001 and worked as an auto mechanic until his daughter was born. Now, Sissoko welds nature-inspired sculptures, drawing from his past career and experiences.
My ethnic group, we are farmer. So I grew up raising cow, sheep, and when I came here, I couldn't do any garden, but since we bought our house, you know, I've been 16 years, I've been doing my own gardening.
Sissoko joined nearly 50 other artists for the opening of the 34th annual Sculpture in the Garden exhibit at North Carolina Botanical Gardens. He stood in front of his installation where transmission gear insects pollinate human-sized flowers made out of manifolds, springs, and propane tanks. This is Grandpa's garden.
My father-in-law, he loved garden, he loved insects, so we decided to name after one of his desires.
Many more sculptures line the trails of the garden. Emily Oglesby, the communications and exhibit coordinator for NC Botanical Gardens, oversees the submission process and placement of the sculptures.
Right now, we're in this kind of late summer period where the sunflowers are are appearing, the asters, the goldenrod. Soon the leaves will start to change, the light starts to change, the grasses get really fluffy.
Inside a raised bed, white ceramic lotuses appear to float upon the murky waters, where tadpoles swim just below the surface. Artist Karen Stevens Fisher said hand-building these blooms was cathartic.
The lotuses just seemed perfect for me. They just spoke to me because of all the things that I've been going through, and including COVID. You know, just this whole period of time of trying to find our way forward through difficult times, and that out of all of this muck and mud and watery depths will arise this beautiful flower at some point. At the time, I didn't really think that they would necessarily be on view or for sale. It was just part of my process of grieving and working through what I was working through.
Forrest Greenslade, a retired molecular biologist and longtime participant in the exhibit, took an educational approach to sculpture and submitted an installation he calls
Food for Sex. The pollinator is looking for a meal and the plant is looking for sex.
His artwork lines the side of the garden's information center. Painted bees, ladybugs, and butterflies feed on pointillistic flowers made of galvanized steel.
As they're moving the pollen from plant to plant, it increases the genetic variability of the plant species and therefore increases the probability that it will survive over millennia.
Greenslade won an honorable mention for his work entitled Frog Magazine's Best Dressed of 2022, a collection of painted metal frogs. A panel of two local artists judged the sculptures, awarding three honorable mentions and one Best in Show. Beck Conrad, Fabrication and Innovation Lab Manager at the NC School of Science and Math, and one of the evening's two jurors, announced the final award.
I referred to the thoughtful artist statement and was impressed by the time invested to find just the right pieces as well as the craftsmanship to assemble such a piece. Our selection for Best in Show is Grandpa's Garden by Hamadou Sosiko.
How does it feel? You got Best in Show.
Last year I got a prize, and this year I got another prize. So I'm very excited, you know, to keep doing what I'm doing. Thank you very much.
You can see Grandpa's Garden and other sculptures at the North Carolina Botanical Gardens. Sculpture in the Garden will run through December and is free to the public during normal operating hours. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Zachary Turner.